Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante with us, returning from his southern trip for some golfing, Mr. Andy Shea. Andy, how we doing?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. Thank you. Not good to be back, but good to be back. Already missed the 60-degree weather, but it was awesome. Thanks. It was awesome. We went down to Myrtle Beach, took our son down for his Christmas present, and his buddy flew in from Chicago, and they played 108 holes of golf.
Oh, good like, Lord. And how many days?
They were 36 in a couple days. I learned a valuable lesson now that I'm more life season, 5 days in a row. Too much. No. Great golf courses. Great. My buddy who lives down there, really good friend of mine for a quarter century, maybe close to 30 years, lives down there now. He's in his life season 60s as well. And he's like, my hands hurt, my butt hurts, my legs hurt, my knees hurt. And I'm like, because he did five rounds as well. And he was like, we can't do that. And I'm like, oh, no, we will never do that again. But because it was a combination of the body and the mind and the golf game. It was like the first 3 days, golf game was fine. By the last round, we were like, by the last round, we played a shamble because we could barely function. Against the Young Bucks. First 3 days, we cleaned their clock. But by the fifth day, we were like, we need help.
They outlasted you. And it's interesting, whatever you say about the youngsters playing 36, they're just warming up on the first 18. They'll get you on the back 18, right?
No joke. That is so true. You know, plus they got their bag stuffed with all their adult refreshments. And by the time they get to the second round, They're happy as pigs in mud. They're like, let's go.
Oh, well, I'm glad you had a good time with
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And more importantly, Andy, you had time with your family. Your wife was there. Your son yes. was there. That's fantastic. So it doesn't change the fact that I hate you for being down there in better weather. Doesn't change that fact, but I'm also happy for you, Andy. It sounded like a great time. All right, let's shift gears from Andy's golf game. Let's talk about some college football. While you're away, Andy, interestingly enough, the college football world did not come to an end.
Of course not. There is no offseason.
It kept on churning and churning, and I'll tell you what, I want some interesting information came out, and you know me and my rankings, right? Love those.
You love rankings. Right? Yeah, love just rankings. You can't get enough of them.
Right. And I essentially sent you two different rankings, and my point isn't so much to look at those rankings as more to interpret them and what they mean. The two rankings that I sent you, number one was a ranking of the recruiting classes in the Big Ten over the last 5 years. Okay. For most of the college football history, this tells you where talent was. You know, how'd you do recruiting over the last 4 or 5 years? No surprise at the very top of the Big Ten rankings is Ohio State. Their national ranking
always will be. Yes. Always has been, always will be, Jimmy. They just
how about this for consistency? Their ranking over the last 5 years, 4-4-5-4-4. I don't know what happened that year where they were only fifth. That was the outlier, poor recruiting that year. What's fascinating to me in this listing, though, is your current national champion, Indiana Hoosiers, ranked 15th. 15th in the Big Ten in recruiting. They were a playoff team the last 2 years, national champions this past year. Now, I also sent you, The Athletic put this out, they ranked portal classes for this year. And some of the usual suspects, LSU number one, Indiana number two. How about that? Texas, Texas Tech, Miami, and Penn State was in that list also, I think, as much as anything for the quantity of players that they brought in after losing even more. So that's a long way for me to get to ask you, Andy.
Right.
Just how important now is the transfer portal in talent acquisition? Has it reached the level that the portal is as important as recruiting?
Ooh, man, Jimmy, put five bullets in your gun and fire them all at once on automatic. I still think you need, at the core, you need to get. So I thought it was about getting for the longest time, it was, you know, the five-star rankings and the four-star rank. It was about predetermined best, right? It was how many of the predetermined best could you get? But now you have free agency in the transfer portal. So you're looking for certain players at certain positions. And, you know, Matt Campbell has talked about this a lot at Penn State. I think you're looking for players that fit, right, what they're looking for and the kind of person they are and yada, 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 all that coach talk stuff. But it is really relevant. I think you're looking for a combination that's the right fit rather than all of the best. I mean, under Cignetti, right, the two recruiting classes that he put together were 65th and 47th, right? His first year, 65th, then 47th. This most recent recruiting class was 32nd. So his transition class was 65. Hello, that looks like a familiar number to Penn State. But he brought in the right transfer portal book. It wasn't a complete roster of transfer portal players that won a national championship. It was a very interesting mix. Two of those stud receivers were homegrown recruited players, right? So I think it's a combination of looking for the right players. I think the like, how many five stars you got, how many four stars you got, I think that's dying on the vine, Jimmy. I really do. I think how many of the best players did you get? Well, they're the preconceived best. You've got the transfer portal as a complete second outlet now to cover anything that you don't get, you know, talent development wise. So I still hold on to my notion, and I'm going to hang on to it with two hands and swing around, Jimmy, that it's the best players. You're looking for the right players, not the best players necessarily.
Well, and Andy, I previously on this show have prefaced a statement of mine by saying, I'm about to say the dumbest thing ever. Well, I'm going to again have a new candidate for dumbest comment ever.
Okay.
It's about acquisition of talent. And does it really matter whether you get the talent by recruiting them or by getting them through the portal? With the recruiting, for the longest history, it's been about, yeah, give me a team of five stars, give you a team of three stars, I'm probably going to beat your team. It doesn't mean that any of your three stars might end up better than some of my five stars. Development happens, they change. Now that leads to, you know, the comment about the portal, where instead of recruiting 17 and 18 year olds, I'm acquiring 20, 21, 22 year olds who right. already have 2 or 3 years of college experience. So not only do they have that college experience under their belt, they've also physically matured, and I have a better grasp on how talented they are, because I not only got to see them play in high school, I got to see them play in college. But I think also you've got to look at where the team is in their progression. Matt Campbell is looking at a team where 50 players left. Right. Well, he's going to have to bring in a lot of portal players. Indiana, and I wish I had the numbers in front of me. I do not, Andy. How many portal guys he brought in his first 2 years. But this year, I'm willing to bet, you know, he only brought in 16, and he only lost 10 players. This year, he's bringing in quality rather than quantity, because he's in a different place within his program.
Correct. He's cherry picking right now. I think it was like in the 30s, his first couple years that he brought in. And so if you think about Indiana, the national championship team, right? And I look at them, were they the best roster in the country? No, they were not. They had some elite spots. They were elite at the quarterback position. They were elite on the defensive line. Very, very good at linebacker. I wouldn't say elite, but they did have some gaps, right? The running back, their running game was good, not great. Their offensive line was good, not great, right? Their secondary, okay, good, not great. But it's not necessary. The talent matters. But when the talent sort of pulled on the same rope, they knew exactly what they were doing across the board. Defensively, they were too deep safety. They were going to play zone. They were really good at it, and you had to figure out how to beat it. Nobody could. It made their elite players, their defensive line, that much better, right? Their weakness made their strengths that much better. That's how Cignetti did this. That's why he's such a unicorn. He's like, I don't want all the best players. I want the ones that are going to play the kind of football that I think both sides of the ball need to be for us to be successful. That's why he's so different than everybody else that he's like, he's not a talent guy. Sure, he got a great quarterback, but that was a risk turned into a Heisman. It wasn't a great risk, but it was still risky. He's looking for ones that will play football the way that he wants and thinks it's best for them to win. And he finds them because there's so many of them to choose from.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're not done talking about this, Andy, because when we come back, I've got a question for you about Kurt Cignetti in Indiana. We'll hit that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. Returning to the show is Andrew P. Shea. I am Jim Galante. Andy, in quarter number one, besides talking about your golfing trip, we also were talking about our old friend, the transfer portal, and we were talking about Indiana and how they did things very differently than was the standard. We had, I think it was Bill Connolly who put together the blue chip ratio,
right,
who essentially said you had to have more blue chip players than non-blue chip players to win a national championship. To give an idea, that those are 4- and 5-star players. And if you're Ohio State, you're probably up near 90% blue chippers.
Right.
For raw numbers, one where we saw, you know, Indiana played Oregon in the playoff. Oregon had over 50 blue chip players, which meant they were well above that 50% mark. They were probably closer to 60 or 70%. Indiana had a total of 8 blue chippers, okay? So you know, it asks the question, have they created a new model to how you win, or are they just an outlier, Andy?
Yeah, I still feel like it still feels to me like Kurt is a bit of an outlier because he spent so long on the outside looking in at college football at the highest levels, right? Remember, he was a D2 head coach, right, at IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Legacy, family legacy there. That's where he really cut his teeth as a head coach. Well, that's D2. You're taking the, you know, FCS, you know, occasional FBS, but mostly FCS tweeners and trying to get them to Division II. So they were very successful there because he was looking for the right players, not the best players. And James Madison, same way, very much an undertow team, right? Like you're not going to get 4 and 5 star guys, right? Like you're going to. So I still feel Kurt and Indiana, the way Kurt has built it, is very much, I've said it a million times, I think he's a unicorn. I really do, Jimmy. I think if you try and follow his model, you could easily fail for so many reasons. He has just had enough time from the outside looking in to figure out how to do it differently and possibly succeed, and now he has succeeded.
Andy, you know, I said before the first segment ended, I was going to ask you a question, and that was
yes.
This is where I was headed. The quarterback position, you don't just need a good quarterback to win.
Right.
You need other players, but you're probably not going to win unless you have the quarterback also. He is now, this year, he's bringing in Josh Hoover from TCU. So this is his third straight year he's going to the portal for his quarterback. He's looking to go now 3 for 3. No doubt his first 2 years, he got the quarterback position right. But the question is a little bit of nature. I guess it's nature versus nurture. Mendoza, who he brought in, I know I brought up this statistic or this little tidbit of information, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think when Mendoza came in as a high school recruit, he was ranked the 134th best quarterback coming out.
At his position. Yeah, near closer to 150 than 100.
Yeah, not best player, best quarterback, meaning there were 133 guys thought of as better than him. He is now a Heisman Trophy winner, a national champion, and he's the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Now, okay. Was this Kurt Cignetti just identifying talent very well, seeing what other coaches didn't see? Or was it also his development at Indiana that he's just that good a coach?
No, it was picking the right guy. And okay, so it was 80% picking the right guy, 20% putting him in the right situation with the guys around him. Remember, his offensive line was not letting him stand back there and choose and pick, particularly in the national championship game. Man, Miami defensive front was no joke. They're an NFL caliber defensive front, and they were up his keister. And remember, his numbers, Mendoza's numbers were not like off the charts in the national championship game, but he just played the game a certain way that made his numbers irrelevant. He didn't need the big numbers to have the big impact. You know what I mean? He was prepared for the moment. He could handle the pressure.
I want to interrupt you for a second, Andy, just to enhance the point you're making. Any Penn State fans who saw the Indiana-Penn State game will say, boy, Andy, are you correct? Everyone thinks about that last touchdown pass at the back of the end zone where the receiver just made a crazy great play. But they went the length of the field. There were multiple big plays that Mendoza and his receivers made. It wasn't just that last one. That's a guy who's up to the moment.
Yeah, there wasn't a moment that was ever too big for him. So that's why as the stakes got higher, his numbers sort of became irrelevant because it was about those big moments And what did he do? Okay, so he might have missed three or four passes in a row. Remember, they were at one point, they were like, man, he has five incompletions or six in a row. Who cares? It's the moments that matter. So I still think, going back to your original question, not your original question, but your original point asking about Mendoza, 80% Cignetti identifying the guy, 20% building an offense that puts him in position to play to his strengths, which is no his biggest strength and his greatest asset. No moment's too big for him, and he has no fear of failure.
Andy, that leads to the next question, which is Mendoza. A lot of smart people said there were 133 better quarterbacks in this class than Mendoza, okay? A lot of smart people said that. They were judging him as a 17 or 18-year-old. Now, correct, you know, 3-4 years later, when he's 21, 22 years old, and you reevaluate, or at least Kurt Cignetti reevaluated, he said, no, this guy's pretty good. In fact, I don't know if he said it out loud, but was he thinking this could be a Heisman Trophy winner under my tutelage? So that leads to my question. At the quarterback position, we're seeing so many teams at the top of the game who are bringing in portal quarterbacks. Has it reached a point where, at least at quarterback, I'm better off going to the portal for my guy who he's gone through his growing pains elsewhere? I get to evaluate college tape, not just high school tape. And that's now the smarter way to acquire my quarterback.
Good question. Has it reached that point? It's you made me think about this one. It's hard for me to say, because I still think we are in the era, albeit I think we're at the end, or at least the beginning of the end, where so much of this recruited talent has been developed elsewhere and is out there to choose from, right? The last 2-3 years, let's just say 3 years, the last 3 years, there was a lot of it to choose from, and everybody was picking and choosing and taking the meat off the bone. Well, at places like Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon, for example, they're not developing any quarterbacks, right? A lot of other programs are taking transfer portal quarterbacks, and guys are moving around. So one thing I think that is possible that I want to present in this is I think the pool is going to shrink, right? Hmm. The pool might shrink a little bit, Jimmy, because everybody's now sort of playing a little bit of catch up, and they're looking for that quarterback in the transfer portal. So how many young recruited quarterbacks, whether you were highly recruited or not, are getting opportunities in the last 2 to 3 years, Jimmy, to actually quote unquote develop at the level we've seen teams have to choose from the last 3 years? They've had a cornucopia of players that have had time to develop to choose from. I think that pool might shrink a little, but then you've got other schools like Michigan, Texas, Alabama. They're developing their own quarterbacks right now, right? They've gone with the guy that they picked. So it's a very murky pond for me right now to see it as a clear cut. One way, has the QB position reached that point where the portal strategy is better than recruiting? I say that I'm not flippant on it. I just think that the pool's going to shrink. And I think you're going to have an option. You're going to have two options. If you went the portal, you're going to need to be working just as hard on development as you are in the portal, rather than just picking the portal and not being the guy.
Well, I'm not sure if the pool's getting smaller or the demand's getting greater, which has the same effect.
Same effect.
And I think if you were to talk to coaches, I suspect the vast majority of them would say, I'd rather recruit my guy and develop him my way. But I think you can't, I guess, and I'm going to use Penn State as an example. This was Matt Campbell brought in his guys. Okay. So that's not a traditional transfer where he didn't like what he had, so he went out and got. He went out and got his own guys, Rocco Beck and also the freshman, redshirt freshman, Alex Mansky. And here's my theory, Andy. He brought in Mansky, who he had already seen a year of him, and thought he was worthy enough to offer him an opportunity to come to Penn State. There's no doubt Mansky is going to be sitting behind Rocco Beck, but this is going to be a second year of evaluation that Matt Campbell's going to get on him. After this season, Matt Campbell's going to have a decision to make. I've had 2 years evaluating Alex Mansky. Is he my guy? Yes or no?
Right.
And that the answer to that question will determine, you know, what he goes looking for in the portal. Does he go looking for a star stud first string quarterback, or does he go out looking for just an insurance policy, a good backup?
Does he have his guy, or does he need to find his guy? That's the question, right? Matt gets to answer. And he has the resources to bring that developmental quarterback in, which is a big deal. I really believe that, having the resources to pay Mansky is a big deal.
Well, but it's also, he has the resources to go outside if he needed to.
Yeah.
But best case scenario is Mansky, your own guy, is your guy. So I don't have to go pay top dollar to bring somebody else in. I've already got my guy in-house. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter two. When we come back, yes, it's back. Ask Andy after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. It's time for your questions. We're going to ask Andy. Between segments, we realize that both of us are arithmetically challenged. So let's move on. Andy, let's start with this right off the top. Jeff from Youngstown. Andy, so you abandoned us for a week of golfing. How'd you hit him?
I hit him really good in the early. We played very hard golf courses because, you know, the boys are, my son's a golf pro and his friend is a playing professional. So they wanted high-end golf. I played really well for 3 days. Fourth day, it started to go a little bit sideways. And by day five, I was like, just being able to make a good swing was a blessing. After 54 holes in 3 days, that's about the max. I think day four, I shot 90. First 3 days, I shot 80, 82, 83, 83. And then I shot 90. And the last day, we just shambled and had fun.
All right. Well, Andy, we still hate you. All right. Let's move on. And this is one of our double bill questions, okay? I'm going to throw two guys out. Steve from Columbia and Jerry from Maryland. I'm going to ask both their questions because they're similar. Steve says, Andy continually criticizes Pat Kraft for the coaching search process, and yet we ended up with a highly respected and well-regarded head coach. What did Pat Kraft do wrong, and what would you have done differently? As you say, get the right guy. Hope you enjoyed the warm weather and golfing. We all despise you considering the weather in PA. Thank you for that, Steve. And here, Jerry in Maryland, similar topic, says, hey, Andy, I think that Matt Campbell was a really good hire. Do you think there was any better realistic hire? So I kind of merged those two questions for you, Andy.
Yeah. So good question, Steve. I want to start with you. I'll take the first one first. I One thing I would have done differently, I would have made sure by whatever, November 29th, whatever that date was, that I had my guy locked down. Because the number, you could see as it moved along, you had the longest time and you got to see on the outside that a lot of schools were getting rid of their coaches and going to be making changes. So you could see that the pond started to become deeper and deeper. And you needed to make sure you had your guy locked down by then. There were some limitations on locking a guy down for guys you might have been interested in, aka the college football playoffs. Great. That's a hurdle. You can't overcome that hurdle. That's out of your control. Control what you can control and have your guy wrapped up by then. They were lucky to get Matt Campbell. The fact that he never had a conversation or had made a call to Matt Campbell until the Wednesday after the BYU coach said no, criminal. That guy was a top, should have been top of your list. Now, Matt Campbell was a guy who was not keen on leaving Iowa State. He had a history of that for a little bit different reason because he's a little different guy. His family is first, and he's not going to be a move-around coach and put his family in that situation. However, you should have made a call before then. So it's better to be lucky than good sometimes because he did not do a good job managing the coach search. I don't know if I think there's anybody better. I know there would have been difficulties. In my mind, I'll give you one, Steve, to answer your question. I think Pat Fitzgerald could have possibly been a better candidate. Would he have been the right guy at Penn State? There's some, obviously, some background and history that might not have flown at Penn State as well, but I think he was a very strong candidate that ended up at Michigan State. He's the only one outside the box that was available. Not available, I think Steve Elko at Texas A&M would have been a great fit at Penn State, but he wasn't available, so you can't throw him in there. But to answer Jerry from Maryland's part of it, yeah, I think they got a steal because A, Matt Campbell fits, and B, Matt Campbell was available, which was very, very fortunate. And because I think last year, if this had happened to Penn State, Matt Campbell's probably not available. It would have been a harder decision for him. This was not a very difficult decision for Matt when Pat Kraft finally did reach out to him.
Andy, couple thoughts on this. I know you've been tough on Pat Kraft, and I don't think Matt Campbell was obviously an option during the season. We've since found out that how he deals with an agent. We know that coaches that are available, they have an agent who will make it known. All right. If there's a coach who's available who would want the Penn State job, you better believe when James Franklin was fired, agents were calling Pat Kraft. Hey,
absolutely.
What about my guy? What about my guy? And, you know, Matt Campbell was never in those conversations. Okay. Just the different nature of the personality of Matt Campbell. He's not chasing the next job all the time. So correct. I think that made it very different. Credit to Pat Kraft and whoever else within the university, when their back was against the wall, they put the full court press on and they made it an attractive option for Matt Campbell, who, as you pointed out, is not necessarily a guy who is a job hopper. You know, he's not a guy who was obvious. And I think if you look around at the other jobs that were filled, Andy, who did better in acquiring a new coach?
I think Florida did a really good job because I think that's a good fit. LSU, blah, that's Lake, blah. Lane Kiffin, no thank you. You know who I think also did a very good job? And I think he was on Penn State's radar, but
when see if we're thinking the same guy. Go ahead.
Chesney.
Yes.
Yeah, from James Madison. I think once Penn State and Kraft thought they had, you know, the BYU coach locked down, but he wasn't locked down, and you don't go dark and quiet with everybody else. I think they made a mistake there too by going quiet and dark on Chesney and forcing him to take another offer, right? Like, I think he wanted the Penn State job, but I think at that point in time where that juncture was, where Penn State failed miserably, he was like, well, UCLA's offered me a job, and Penn State, I can't get an answer from, so I'm taking what I can get. So I think they missed on that guy.
What we don't know is how much Pat Kraft and the administration valued guys with, say, Power Four experience, which Chesney did not have. And I'm not, you know, hey, guess where Kurt Cignetti came from, right? So there's no guarantee on these jobs. And I'll tell you what, Chesney, he may end up failing at UCLA, but that doesn't necessarily mean he would have failed at Penn State, okay?
Correct.
There's more to these jobs than just the coach themselves. All right, let's let me mark off Jerry from Maryland. All right, hey, Vic from Johnstown says, we're going really off course here.
Uh-oh.
Where does Drew Aller go in the draft, and does he have a shot at an NFL career?
Ooh, good one. Good question, Vic. Very good one. Way to go off, Jimmy. I don't think he's drafted, Jimmy. I think he's an undrafted free agent, and maybe an NFL backup at best. Maybe. That's what I see right now. I think he's got all the arm talent you could want, but I think he's a bit of damaged goods right now, not because of the injury. I just think what his experience and what he endured at Penn State has sort of scarred him a little bit. And not necessarily in that it's bad for the program way. I think it was just a bad for him way.
All right, we actually lost Andy there for a second. The gremlins got to us, Andy. You were talking about Drew Aller, that you think he will get a chance. He'll but think he will go undrafted.
I do.
Personally, that wouldn't surprise me also that he went undrafted. But I'm going to use my baseball analogy that I often do with quarterbacks. If there's a pitcher, a kid who can throw 100 miles an hour, he's going to get an opportunity. It doesn't guarantee success, but it's like someone will think we could teach you everything else.
Correct.
Drew Aller has the football comparable to the 100 mile an hour fastball. Got the tools. He looks like an NFL quarterback, 6'5", 235, got the arm strength, got arm talent there, Andy. Somebody is going to say, I could make him an NFL quarterback.
At least give him a chance and take a look and see if we think he's an NFL quarterback. I 100% agree that somebody is going to give him an opportunity.
It's going to happen. And I don't know. I don't have updates on his injury, so we don't know where he's at with that. You know, how will he do? Will he be ready for the combine? Would he be ready for Penn State Pro Day? You don't know, but size and arm strength like he has, that doesn't grow on trees, Andy.
No, it doesn't grow on trees. The injury is relevant because he really does need the Pro Day to sort of flash and show off that arm talent and show where the injury is. So it'd be good if he was available.
And I think, Andy, he'll do well at the interviews. I think he's a smart kid, well-spoken. I think that will help him. All right, Andy, despite technical glitches, we got through our first Ask Andy segment on your return. We have more college football to talk about. A few other things were going on in the college football world. I'll ask you about them when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking college football. Andy, we talked a lot about the portal, but there were other things going on this past week. And one of them, and I'm really fascinated by this and want to get your take, the Pac-12, the new Pac-12,
right,
which has eight teams. They are, so they have a 17, you play the other seven teams, that's seven games, but there's a requirement for eight games to, I don't know if it's to qualify for playoffs or whatever it is, but they need to get to eight games, which means they have to play a repeat game. What they are doing is with the seven-game round robin, half the teams play four home games, three away. The other four, it's the opposite, three home, four away. Right. What they're doing for that eighth week is they're taking the four teams that only had three home games, designating them as the home team, and then instead of assigning who they're going to play ahead of time, they're waiting till the season ends, those seven games. They are then going to assign the games for most interest and probably most importantly, could they set up a game that would help one of their teams make the playoffs? I'm really fascinated by this, Andy, and I want to get your take, and I'm wondering if there's anything in there that other conferences might be able to learn from and may want to try a similar concept. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of dig the idea. I dig the notion as a college football fan, right? Like competitiveness, right? Like that competitive, let's try and do the best we can for our conferences. But at the same time, you know, the two power conferences and the other one, they're just so big, Jimmy. 18 teams in the Big Ten, for example.
Well, let me stop you there, Andy, and ask the question. Might that be more of an enticement? For example, we know Penn State this year does not play Oregon, Indiana, or Ohio State, okay?
Or Iowa.
Okay. So let's say they far exceed expectations, and instead of a 9-game schedule, there's an 8-game schedule. Penn State goes undefeated, so does Ohio State or Indiana or someone else. We didn't have that game scheduled in the regular season. This would be an opportunity to schedule it.
Yeah, do you think they're going to dig that? I dig it as a college football fan, but I just think they're too big to make those delineations. I think the fact that the new Pac-12 is eight teams, I can tell you this, the SEC wants nothing to do with this. Because that sort of competitive mantra for its teams, they feel they already have enough competitiveness per se, and that they're already deep enough. So they're not going to be interested in anything to do with this at all. I think for the Big Ten, I think they should be a little interested in it because they've been a little top heavy. The size of the conferences at the end of the day for me, Jimmy, I see the size of the two power conferences and even the ACC now. I see it as problematic for them being able to manage something like this. But don't get me wrong. I dig the notion, and I think you do too. I love the notion of an open schedule week before your conference championship game to set the table for it. I love that notion, but that's sort of that competitive thing that the big boys won't be interested in because money matters more than competition.
Well, Andy, let me throw something out at you that I hadn't thought of until you were talking there for the Big Ten. Remember the Big Ten said, oh, gee, we want to have automatic qualifiers so that championship week we have 1 versus 2, then 3, 6, 4, 5. Well, how about if you just don't schedule that 9th game? You schedule 8, which means everyone has 4 home, 4 away, but quote unquote championship week. Well, not after 12 games, but after 11 games, yep. I have 1 play 2 for the conference championship. I have 3 play 6, 4 play 5 for playoff seeding, playoff qualifying. And then the balance, the other 12 teams, you know what? I'll make the best matchup. If there's a good matchup, and because there's so many teams, I don't have to have rematches, Andy. I can, you know what? We didn't have, you know, Penn State play Michigan State this year, or however it falls. What do you think?
You had me at hello, Jimmy. I'm a competitive fan. I love the notion and idea of it. I'm like all in on this. I don't think the conferences would, particularly the two big dogs, would be very interested in it. And I definitely know the SEC would be less interested in it than anybody. And with the TV markets, right? The money, right? That, Matt, that's the alpha dog. I would think they would like it. Would they really like it? I don't know the answer to that. They would be, at the end of the day, Jimmy, let's be honest. If TV likes it, it could happen. Right?
Let's be honest. Dollars and cents.
The dollars and cents. If the TV wants it and likes it, guess who's going to get it? The SEC and the Big Ten. You're going to get this because the TV wants it. Do they want it? I don't even think they're looking at it and considering it, but I think it's the notion of it, man, it's got me fired up. I love that competitiveness.
Well, Andy, you know, we went straight from the new Pac-12, which is a group of 6 conference now, okay?
It is.
We went full bore to the Big 2, the Southeast Conference, and the Big 10. What about the other two, the Big 12 and the ACC? Would not the ACC would have loved to have done it this year, where they had like that 5-way tie,
That stupid tiebreaker system of theirs, it fixes their dumbness, right? Like, you could fix it. Let somebody else fix it for you, because what you put in place as it played out was just stupid. It helps, but I also think they're a very large conference. Big 12, I think the Big 12 could do this as well. I think the Big 12 maybe should consider doing this as well.
Well, I think it would create interesting matchups. Those conferences would also, with the novelty of it, Andy, I think they would draw a better TV audience. And if you're the Big 12 or the ACC and got your top teams playing each other, if you had your top 6 teams playing each other, that's quality games. Picture the ACC last year, where you have your Miami, your Clemson, Virginia, who was tied for first or had the first place in the regular season involved. Duke, Florida, you know, I know Florida State was down, but you could take 6 quality teams and get 3 pretty good games out of that. That's kind of a nice day of football.
Jimmy, the way the ACC played out last year, you give me this scenario, noon, 4 and 8, right? Give me noon, 4 and 8. I didn't pay much attention to the ACC because they became their own sort of mess, right? But you give me noon, 4 and 8 one day, as opposed to, say, Big Ten and SEC games where you kind of, the structure's a little more, I'm watching. I'm in. I want to see that. I want to watch how it plays out, because instead of the dysfunctional 5-way tiebreaker that they ended up doing, noon, 4 and 8, I'm in. Give me the competitiveness. That's why I said I love the notion of it. I just don't know in this modern real world if it's possible. However, I think the possibility of it, becoming something that expands into the bigger conferences is lands at the feet of television. They're going to make the decision. If they say this is what we want, the conferences have to dance the dance and say, okay, we have to make this happen now.
See, you and I are looking at this as fans, and I'm going to do a quick exercise here and just give me the names. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, Andy. Give me the top six teams in the Big Ten, you think, going into the season.
Ohio State, USC, Oregon, Michigan,
Indiana,
and Iowa.
Okay. Put those six teams in a bag.
Shake it up.
Shake it up, and they play each other. Let's say, for sake of argument, Oregon and Ohio State are the two teams at the top, so they play each other, and the other four teams in some permutation play each other also.
I want to see those three football games. Yeah. Take the six teams, shake them up, put them out, play them however you want. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Give them a chance. The biggest benefactors are the 5, 6, right? Those are your two biggest benefactors. And because that gives them an extra quality opportunity to win a game. Losing hurts, but winning opens doors.
We talked about, Penn State and their schedule being so poor. Let's face it, you mentioned Iowa. I probably would have put Penn State ahead of them, maybe even Washington. Doesn't matter. But for sake of argument, to your point about that extra data point, Penn State could go 10-2, and the powers that be will look at their schedule and say, not sure that's a playoff team. But right. In this scenario, say they're at that point, they're 9-2. But because of this scenario, they get a game against someone like,
USC or Washington or Iowa.
USC or Washington or Indiana or someone like that, they get a chance at a quality win. And we know because they're matched up against one of the top six teams in the conference.
It's a door-opening opportunity, but I'm not sure the big conferences want to open the door. I think they would have to be forced to open the door. That's just my end-of-the-day belief, that they don't want anything to do with this, but they could. They won't do anything unless they're forced to do it. But give the new Pac-12 credit for thinking outside the box, Jimmy. It is very, very enticing.
It is, and I hate when you're right, Andy, but I believe you're right. It's not gonna, we're never gonna see it, but it's fun conjecture. And as you said, give the Pac-12 credit for throwing it out there on the table as a possibility.
Yeah, they're looking at their second tier teams and trying to create opportunity for them. I love it.
Exactly. And that extra game may be the game that gets one of their teams into the playoffs. The only downside is if they have, say, an undefeated team who's really going to make it to the playoffs, do you give them a good matchup or do you put them against one of the worst teams to guarantee their undefeated season? That's going to have to be the last word, Andy. Thank you. Thank all of you for joining us. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.